Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is the glorious one, Bobby Roode, and you're watching Going In Raw.
Hey, Brendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome back to Going In Raw View.
Where we review old stuff in the world of professional wrestling.
Correct.
Right, Larson? We're available right here at youtube.com/Steven Larson. Available also wherever fine podcasts are. If you really want to help support Going In Raw or Going In Raw View, you can leave us a review, a raw view of your own.
Yeah.
On the iOS podcast app.
iOS.
iOS
podcast app or Google Play or Stitcher or Podbean.
Wherever you want to do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to look up real quick.
Where are we?
Yeah, where are we right
where
now?
Where are we?
They're expanding their like analytics thing because you can look at individual episodes, which are a lot more like, you know, you can actually see, you know, like, oh, how's this episode doing? How's that episode doing?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's good stuff. Still scrolling. I started at the bottom and working my way up. We've been in like the 90s recently. I know that much.
Oh, really? Wow, that's pretty cool.
We're also on the Patreon at patreon.com/Steven Larson. They did away with their weird little customer fee thing that they were planning on doing.
Yes, thankfully.
So that's awesome. And so now if you want to pledge $5 and get that weekly 3 live streams that you get access to, you only have to pay
$5. $5.
None of our episodes are in the top 200. Let's see if our actual show is in the top. Oh, wait. I just saw it. 139. Wow. Look at that. Good for us.
Awesome.
Yay, us.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, people. We're also at Pro Wrestling Tees. We've got a bunch of great shirts there. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah, throw them all up there.
All right, there you go. Anyways. Anyways, we're not here to talk about all that, Larson.
No, we're here
My
to talk
notes.
About Taboo Tuesday 2005.
So, yeah, we reach out to our $10 a month and up patrons.
With
and
3 suggestions.
One from me.
One from me and one from
them.
Yes.
We say, throw out some suggestions. This time, I believe it was our good friend, Jason the Cabbie, threw out Taboo Tuesday 2005, a couple others. And you looked at that one and was like, this is good.
This has some interesting stuff. So we put up to a vote. And last I checked, here I can check quickly right now, Taboo Tuesday received 50% of the vote.
Yeah,
overwhelming
that's what I saw
favorite.
Too. That's what I saw too. So
we did Taboo Tuesday. We did
I feel like the friendos kind of gang up on us. Whatever we put up that they have chosen, that's what they vote for.
And I didn't put down who selected, you know, who was what, whose choices. I just put 3 choices. Up.
Yeah. Yeah. So but my December to Dismember was like in second place, but
yeah,
Taboo
Clash
Tuesday.
Champion 6, my choice.
Yeah.
Last.
Yeah. Last demonetized. Last.
But we're here to talk about Taboo Tuesday 2005. So let's get started. Show opened up with what was supposed to be a tag match, pitting the team of Edge.
Hold on.
Well, here, I guess we got to review.
You're jumping right into this.
We got to review the whole idea of Taboo Tuesday.
Yeah.
It seems like something they're emulating with a mixed match challenge.
Yeah.
Having audience involvement.
Well, it's on a Tuesday for one thing.
It's true.
Yeah.
Audience involvement in the show by way of voting for participants in matches and stipulations.
Both Taboo Tuesday was too much. And this mixed match challenge just feels like it's too much. It's
wasn't on, there Cyber Monday too? Wasn't that
there was a Cyber Monday
voting aspect of that as well?
It was all branded in a very real player esque way. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of you people are probably way too young to remember Real Player, but it was like, you know, the video distribution platform
buffering
of buffering. Of the back
where
in the day.
High def was 240.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a lot of pixels there, but I think I can make out a booby. it came to us from the iPayOne Center. The iPayOne
San Diego, California.
iPayOne successfully bid for the naming rights for a 5-year contract. They only lasted 2 before they started defaulting on their payments because iPayOne went away.
Mm-hmm.
Really, nobody decided to iPayOne.
Yeah.
And so then I forget what they became. So I always like looking at those little tiny nuggets because they were like, oh, yeah, coming from the iPayOne. I'm like, oh, iPayOne, they couldn't have survived the bubble.
Yeah.
They could not.
I know.
That shit burst, I guarantee.
Yeah.
They were one of the casualties.
And so, but yeah, how did things kick off? I've got my weird Steve notes.
Edge,
you have the
Edge and Chris
notes.
Masters were scheduled to take on some opponents selected by the WWE Universe.
Oh, and this is what I did too. So I didn't look at, I mean, I think I looked at the card when we first decided to do this, but I have a terrible memory, so I didn't retain anything. So I went ahead and, like, every time there was a vote that was put up, we're going to mention what the vote was, who the participant or who the options were.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, it's going to be this person, and then see if I got it right or wrong.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them I got wrong. This one I got right. Because the
it
two
was pretty obvious.
The two most over people by far. I mean, they didn't look. I don't think that the voting was fake, but they obviously rigged it in favor of certain things. Like, who's going to choose for the Ric Flair Triple H thing? Who is ever going to choose a submission
one
match?
One fall to the finish.
Isn't that just a regular match?
As far as I'm aware.
That's a regular match.
Or Batista versus Coachman. A verbal debate.
Yeah.
No one's going to select that.
I mean, that was the most tongue-in-cheek version of them rigging the vote, but that was totally rigging the vote.
Yeah.
Anyways, in this first one, it was Edge and Chris, yeah, the masterpiece Chris Masters.
And Edge, and they eventually took on Matt Hardy and Rey Mysterio. Of course, this is after Matt Hardy and Edge, I believe, had their feud because they referenced it.
Who else was up for vote on this one?
I didn't
one?
Make note of that.
Oh, Hardcore Holly.
Yeah.
Was one of them. And he had this smile on his face like he was on The Bachelorette or something. Like when they said, okay, your next option is Hardcore Holly. And the people were like, boo, you suck. Because I don't think anybody ever, he was never, I don't think, supposed to be a good guy. Maybe during his Sparky Plug days.
Well, I think during his Hardcore Holly days at times, he not necessarily a good guy, but he was not a bad guy.
He was supposed to be like a face?
Yeah, but like a tough face.
I still don't think anybody liked him.
It's because his disposition seemed sour.
He always seemed, but legitimately.
Yeah.
He always seemed like he really...
He seemed really grumpy.
He seemed like a really grumpy guy. Even like if you watch a shoot interview with Hardcore Holly, he just seemed so grumpy. That just seemed like who he was.
Yeah.
Grumpy goose, grumpy. Man.
So yeah.
Like he just always woke up from a nap on the wrong side of the bed.
Edge and Lita come out first and drop a promo and declare that Edge is not wrestling tonight.
So Edge did a lot of neat things. This was not one of them.
No.
I was really kind of... I was like, wait a second. Really? You're not going to do this?
Yeah.
You're not going to be in
this
match?
Heel, it's heel heat.
Like, the worst part, the worst thing you can do is the heel.
Is to not wrestle.
That's like, that's over the line.
If he was hurt or something.
Yeah, it could be. That could be. He was hurt a lot, too.
Yeah.
So maybe that was the case.
So his replacement for the evening.
Lita looked like $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
They were a great, I mean, if
they really were.
Honestly, if there was any couple in the history of WWE that you'd want to see a live sex show with, it was those two. Can you think of anybody else? Like, I wouldn't really want to see Macho Man and Elizabeth. Seems like it'd be weird. She always came off like kind of a church person. Like you'd see her at church.
Oh.
So I don't want to see somebody like that person have sex.
All right.
She's like a Sunday school teacher. I don't want to see them have sex. Lita, yeah.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, no. Macho Man, definitely not.
No.
Be weird.
Yeah.
What are it's like in bed?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It'd be a lot of that, I imagine. So, Snitsky.
It'd be a lot of that. Snitsky, I definitely wouldn't want to see in a live sex show.
He was Edge's replacement.
Oh, yeah, I know. And it was supposed to be like a big reveal, but everything. Like, I've never heard so many people groan.
I know.
With disappointment.
I know.
Because Edge's music hits, and it's like, oh, he's cool looking. He's
you're
a cool,
on this day.
On this day. And then Lita looks like $1 trillion. And
yeah,
it's like,
Edge is coming out with that briefcase.
Oh, this guy is a world champion. He can be a world champion any day of the week.
And then Snitsky replaces
and then
replaces
him. With his weird, huge nipples. He had like the beefiest, meatiest, longest nipples.
Nipples.
Me, I. So there are only a small handful of times in my life that I can actually recall laughing with just unbridled pep. Like, I laugh so hard at Ace Ventura 2 when he comes out of the rhino's butthole. One of the only other times I can remember laughing so hard is when me and Evald were sitting there watching a Snitsky match. And Evald said, look, his nipples are so long. I started laughing so hard because they were.
Really?
And you could not stop looking at how long the nipple aspect, not the areola, but
I did,
the nipple.
Yeah, no, I put that together. I didn't know it was
so long.
Didn't notice his nipples at all.
Anyways, I was really happy that Chris Adonis got some play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's still an impact.
Yeah. It was weird because this is a Raw versus SmackDown match, and it was strange they took the approach of having referees from both brands in the ring.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
right.
It was Nick Patrick, the former NWO ref, Nick Patrick, and Mike Chioda, who's still refereeing for WWE.
I appreciate that Edge. Part of Edge's reason for leaving, though, he says, it doesn't do anything to further my career to beat you guys.
And that's
I'm
a good point.
I'm like, that's what we talk about during predictions. Like, yeah. It doesn't do anything for him to beat him. Yeah. That can't be a storyline reason, though, but he made it that. Maybe that was a neat thing.
That is a neat thing.
Yeah.
Breaking kayfabe.
Yeah. Adonis was booked, Chris Masters was booked really, really strong.
This was before anybody broke the master lock, correct?
I believe, probably. Yeah. There was nothing left for him after somebody broke the master lock.
I know.
You know, it was all downhill from there. Like you were saying, Nick Patrick, SmackDown ref, totally shades of NWO Nick Patrick.
Yeah.
He was doing that thing again where each guy kind of wanted their own guy to win.
Kind of, yeah.
Which was really
silly.
But it
was weird because there was this weird spot where Nick Patrick is calling a pinfall when Chris Masters has Mysterio in the master lock. And Chris Masters, his back is on the mat. And so Nick Patrick is calling the pinfall, and then Kyoto just breaks it up.
Yeah. Like, that's not how you're supposed to be.
No, you're supposed to be impartial as a referee.
Right, exactly. But again, you know, who knows what shenanigans they thought Nick Patrick was going to get up to. I mean, he had a resume of being like
No, that's true.
You know, a very, very partial ref.
True.
Which is the opposite.
But he did not have his head on backwards.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like in spirit he did.
Rey Mysterio picked up the win, pinning Chris Masters after a springboard splash.
There, at one point, I have written down here on my notes, that Adonis superplex was scary. Was it Adonis or Snitsky who got into who was the victim of a superplex, and it was really like he did not get much spring off it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it felt like it was like if I was going to take a superplex.
Yeah.
Like, I probably wouldn't get full rotation. I would just kind of fall.
Kind of head first towards Matt and just hope to get your legs around in time so you don't break your neck.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like, man.
It would have been better if Edge was in this match as a kickoff for the show.
Yeah.
We've been recording a lot of videos today.
Yeah, it's all right. You're doing good.
No,
you're
I know.
Fine.
It's a kickoff for the show because Edge did a lot of neat things, brings energy. Snitsky, not so much.
No, he was like the antithesis of energy.
Yeah, it really was.
He was just long nipples and
there
a weird
was a lot of questionable hires by WWE at this time.
Yeah, man, a lot of them. Like Tomko,
pretty much three quarters of the next match.
Yeah.
Oh no, all of them. All of them the next match.
Who we got? You? Oh god. Oh god. Yeah. Oh, it just got worse and worse.
Yeah.
When it gets worse from Rob Conway, then it's bad.
Yeah.
Next up, we had a Mick Foley backstage thing
where he's talking to somebody, and the camera pulls back, and it's Maria Kanellis
looking like a million bucks. Yeah, she's great. I watched that Impact wedding thing again.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, holy crap! Impact did some cool stuff. They can do some good stuff sometimes.
It's pretty impressive how she's improved in terms of doing character stuff.
It's
like her confidence on the mic.
It's all just maturity, man. Oh, yeah. You know, it's reps and maturity. Yep. She's like, you know, a friggin' adult. Once you turn into like a real adult, not saying like in your early 20s, you're not really an adult then. Unless you go to like NOM. But if you're like a real adult and you have your priorities in order, oh, man, it's great. It's so great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she is. So the gag was their luggage got mixed up. And he was saying like, this looks like it belongs to you. And then
the end was her taking her clothes off.
Yeah, but the Foley actually made the gag. So what should have been a lecherous, this was totally like a Vince lecherous gag. It was kind of adorable because of Foley and Maria Kanellis. I mean, her gimmick at the time was Dullard. It made it more kind of like, oh, kind of a cutesy sex gag. You know, not so lecherous like Vince, coming in his pants because he's gross. With Foley.
Or what Lawler did later on the show several times.
Right, exactly. So, like, she, like, the gag, like, in the end, she ends up, you know, naively taking off all her clothes because she thinks that they belong to him and his luggage. and she's off camera, and she says, "Have a nice day, Mick," all very innocently. And he says, "I think I just did." But it was kind of cute. I thought it wasn't as lecherous. We've seen some very lecherous segments with Vince.
And as I said, we'll see. There was plenty in the show.
With Mick Foley, I thought it was actually kind of silly, kind of cute. And I even my note here says, Mick Foley can make the most tasteless of gags cute. What is up? So Rob Conway was doing the narcissist gimmick.
Kind of, yeah. He had his own picture on his tights. I really liked that he wore sunglasses in the ring for a little bit. I wish he'd wrestled the entire match with his sunglasses
on. Yeah, that'd have been
good. I understand there's a hazard there involved.
I mean, definitely a body guy. He was a great
beyond body, there's not much going on there.
No, Vince loved it. Why was he always... Has the narcissist gimmick ever really worked?
No.
I mean, he's tried it ad nauseum.
Yeah.
A lot, on a lot of different people. And it never really goes over.
No,
I mean, to varying degrees of success.
I kind of feel like this is... You know, it's hard to say because Vince has always been infatuated with huge muscular men.
Yeah.
In terms of making them stars.
Yeah.
And yeah, the 80s and early 90s are really bad in that respect. But man, it seems like in 2005 when you've had success with people who aren't that body type. I mean, Stone Cold was not.
I know.
The Rock, he's large and athletic, but he's not bodybuilder.
Dude, look at
Mankind.
Look at, yeah.
Even Triple H in his early days.
Can't point to anybody really.
They were all the top guys. I mean, Triple H looked like he had a bit of a boiler in the show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like your greatest success was achieved with wrestlers who didn't look like they were bodybuilders.
I know
Triple H, before he was wrestling, was a bodybuilder. And yet you keep going back to that well with people who, have awesome-looking physiques, but there's not much else going on.
I don't get it, man. I don't get it at all.
It blows my mind why he kept trying to create stars out of wrestlers who basically were just muscle.
I know. I have no answer. I wish I knew. It seems like a lot of that. The thing is, a lot of this era, it's interesting because it did feel like the WWE were sort of having this really awkward identity crisis as far as like, who are we exactly? And they were so afraid to take the risks that they did take during the Attitude Era that weren't working anymore. They were afraid to take the next big risk, the next big thing, which ended up, for better or worse, ended up being the PG era of all things. Mm-hmm. You know, they said, okay, well, we need to relate. We need to like get, you know, we need to bring the families in because we're not bringing anybody else in.
Yeah.
So they went PG. But in the meantime, they were holding steady, or they were holding like, you know, with a cold death grip to a lot of old things in the past. And it seems like that might have been a case of him sort of being, well, I mean, muscle guy. You know, because it couldn't find characters or something.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, it's like you had the brand split, but it was definitely the kind of situation where.
Well, this was after, you know, some of the WCW guys who came over had already left.
The ECW guys and the WCW guys, that period of time when they had all those people.
Pretty much had everybody,
was pretty much kind of done with.
Yeah. And so they were filling the rosters for Raw and SmackDown with new talent like Chris Masters, like Rob Conway, like Tyson Tomko, Lance Cade.
I can say at least with Chris Masters, and I'm not just saying this because he's on Impact, because I don't even do my Impact reviews anymore.
No.
But at least with Chris Masters, that dude is actually kind of witty.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's kind of a reason why you still see him on TV. It might be on pop, but it's on TV. His personality kind of gives him some staying power. I mean, there's not a lot of range there and it's not a lot of depth, but he actually had charisma.
It's like an ocean compared to the depths of personality of Tyson Tomko.
Exactly. Or even like Rob Conway. Like there was just nothing going on there at all. And then you have all sorts of other guys, like, I mean, Bull Buchanan. You had guys who could say lines, but there was just not a lot to grab onto otherise. Mm-hmm.
And they're largely interchangeable in the ring.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
Terms of wrestling.
There was nothing special. Yeah, totally.
So the next match was Rob Conway and Tyson Tomko.
Tyson, I didn't realize somebody could be so, like, the personification of a tribal tattoo.
Yeah, I mean, literally covered his entire upper body.
His entire body and his trunks had tribal tattoo designs on them.
Yeah.
Oh, so weird. Like, it's like the most 2003 person in, like, 2005.
He was, like, the living embodiment of nu metal.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Against the team of
Eugene. And then the fans had a choice of three legends. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Kamala, and Jimmy Snuka.
When this vote happened, I figured it'd be Hacksaw. I thought everybody loves Hacksaw.
Yeah, I thought so too.
But Snuka won.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is before I had no idea until like when the court stuff started happening that he had killed the person.
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly.
Yeah, I had no idea that was the case until same time.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, the Eugene thing. We've talked about Eugene before. Pretty unfortunate. I mean, obviously it wouldn't fly today.
No.
Okay, I can't sit here and can I sit here and play devil's advocate? Say they're trying to put out like a positive image of what's the proper terminology these days? Mentally challenged? Is that what it is? Because he was supposed to be that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do they get any kudos for that?
I'm not,
you're not going to plead ignorance on this, are you?
No, I'm honestly, I mean, I know the basics of the Eugene character.
Yeah.
But I'm not like well versed in his entire run as that character to make an assessment one way or the other in that respect.
What you saw on the pay-per-view was kind of, that's the only sample size you need.
All right.
I'll say this. Cause I understand where you're coming from.
Cause I mean, I've seen this show, maybe two or three others,
mm-hmm.
maybe one promo, but you know, with such a small sample size, it's hard to tell.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it was not a good idea.
It was a terrible idea.
Well, the funny thing is, Nick Dinsmore is like really good,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of, it's, I mean, on the you know, at the very least, it's very sad to think this guy probably could have gone really far, you know, in terms of being a part of the WWE roster. But I would like to think that maybe backstage, it wasn't a cynical thing, and it was more of a, hey, you know, let's try to do something special for, you know, some of these kids out there. And let's give them a guy that they can maybe relate to. I would like to think, and it was just like, hey, that's your heart's in the right place, but that's a bad idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, maybe somebody backstage gets point for that. I'm sure. I think Brian Zane did a video on
Eugene.
Oh,
okay. I'd like to see that.
That, you know, maybe sheds a bit more light, because I'm not even sure. Was it Dusty? Who came up with that character? I forget it was Dusty. I forget who it was. But anyways, I'd like to think that there's some silver lining there, but it's just no understanding completely that it's like, that would not fly today. And it's like really like misguided to do that. It is what it is. But anyways, he teamed up with Jimmy Snuka. I think the ugliest thing for me about Eugene was when they brought him into ECW for one night stand, one of the one night stands.
Yeah.
Understanding completely what that crowd was going to do.
Yeah.
At that point, it was like, oh man, you kind of lose all points for any effort you wanted to put into this or any good intentions you had.
Yeah.
Because then that just brings out like a gleeful ugliness that everybody has. Do the after one too.
Yes.
No,
I know. And I remember that. And I remember thinking that this is,
it was like,
this makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. This is exactly what you don't want to be doing with this type of character. You need to be treading really, really lightly and on eggshells basically.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It was messed up, but anyways, yeah. And then he was in there with Jimmy Snuka who look up his past. And they were taking on, Conway and Tomko. I mean, there's not a lot.
No, there was not much to this match. Eugene was in the match for the vast majority of it. Got a hot tag to Snuka, who eventually pinned Conway after a Superfly Splash.
Yeah.
Tomko got in the ring and attacked Snuka, and then Hacksaw and Kamala came down the ring, made the save, got their finishers off.
Yeah. Time to move on.
Yeah.
What happened next?
Carlito versus Mankind. So the vote in this
match. How many
match,
matches? I didn't even know that he fought Carlito. How many matches did he have after he retired in the WWE?
Like at least a dozen.
I know, right?
I said during this match that he hadn't been in action for 18 months.
Let me ask you something before we talk about Carlito.
At least a match in 2013 at some point.
Did it feel to you, all the matches that I saw after his retirement, and I mean, before his retirement as well.
Well, which retirement? You'd be more specific.
Mankind, when he retired prior to WrestleMania 2000.
Okay.
Okay, so he retired. And then he came back for WrestleMania 2000.
Yeah.
And then he would come back sporadically.
Yeah.
In a variety of roles, but also wrestling roles. I think he took on Edge.
Yeah, he did a hardcore match at WrestleMania or something. It was a good match.
Okay.
Too.
Yeah, it was.
Neat thing Edge did.
I felt, watching this match, and I don't know, I can't place another one. I got the feeling in this match that Mick Foley might have been the kind of guy to let others take liberties with him that they shouldn't. I felt like Carlito was going, I felt like Carlito was going a little bit tougher on him than maybe he should. Maybe I was just like, man,
I didn't get that sense. I mean, like that one spot that looked nasty when he hit the back of his head on the ring step, his head didn't hit at all. It was all arm.
Okay. Well,
and I know he played it a lot and I watched every time and he hits the corner of the ring step with his, you know, like his forearm or elbow.
I think I go back to what RVD said about his last run when he said like some of the wrestlers were taking liberties with him and not being stiff, but sort of like making themselves look good
at his expense.
And I don't know. Okay, so we can definitely say, because The Rock has admitted this and Mankind admitted this, that The Rock did that during the I Quit match when he hit him in the head a million times with chair shots. I just feel like it wouldn't surprise me if some of the guys would do the same thing to Mankind that RVD claimed.
I didn't find it, you know, like obviously noticeable though.
Yeah. Okay.
Not to the degree of The Rock hitting Mankind with a chair about a dozen times.
Crazy thing about Carlito too is that, man, I really feel like he had everything it took to be like top guy, except his packaging was equal parts awesome and had a mid-card ceiling to it.
Yeah, like I like the shirt with the apple on it.
Yeah.
And that kind of embodies what you just said there, because it's like you just look at it, it's like, oh, that's cool.
It's really a cool design.
The front, but then the back just had you know, like really bad font.
Yeah.
I spit in the face of people who don't want to be cool.
And I think his music fit him perfectly, but it was also like the thing.
It's not get the crowd excited
at all. No, not at all. It doesn't. There's no tension to it. There's no drama to it.
No.
And you need that kind of stuff. I mean, who's going to care about the guy coming out to some really laid back Caribbean music when you've got Motorhead playing, you know, when Triple H comes out. So I don't know. I feel like he had everything. And the, you know, I spit in the face of people who want to be cool. I thought that stuff was great. But, man, like, talk about being kind of, you know, stunted from the start because of, like, you know, the packaging that you've been given. But otherwise, I loved Carlito. It was always bizarre to me that he fell off as relative. Like, he was only hot for a relatively short amount of time. He came in and, like, immediately won the United States Championship, I think, in his first match.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of all downhill from there.
Yeah, that's back when they were putting belts on people to get them over as opposed to getting people over and then putting the belt on them.
Yeah,
as
true.
We saw in the tag team match later on.
I know. But in his case, I think it was kind of warranted. I mean, it was kind of like a Kevin Owens situation. Remember, he came in and immediately won stuff. I feel like Carlito had it, like had all the ingredients for it. But just at the time, it just didn't really work, you know? Mm-mm. It was one of those things where, like, they were always afraid. Maybe they were just always afraid to pull the trigger completely on getting him some quality wins.
Could be.
Against guys like Cena.
Well, he lost to Mankind here.
And he lost to Mankind. I mean, talk about a perfect. Like, if this was Edge, he would have won.
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's the kind of thing. Like, I always feel like they always gave Edge, like, the perfect wins. Orton, too.
Yeah.
They always built him through, like, the perfect wins.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes wins really matter.
I mean, it could be a situation. Even back then, they had the idea of, okay, this wrestler is going to fulfill this role. And it seems pretty obvious they had high hopes for Orton and for Edge as singles wrestlers.
That's true.
So maybe they thought, okay, we like Carlito. He's got some skills, but we see him more in the mid-card where he'll take on legends but won't really beat him.
Yeah.
He'll take on main eventers but won't ever really beat him.
Yeah. That's a bummer. He has a great look. Mm-hmm. He still looks amazing, too. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's been like, you know, about 12 years or whatever.
Yeah.
I was also surprised that it wasn't Cactus Jack.
Yeah,
I mean, I think people, they associate like the biggest moment in the Attitude Era, the Hell in a Cell.
With Mankind,
With Mankind, and so that's why they wanted him. But I just figured it'd be like Cactus Jack.
That was probably fixed.
Really? You think maybe? Huh. Could be. That could be. Because I figured, man, you want somebody to really go hardcore on Carlito, bring out Cactus Jack.
Exactly.
But then not everybody's a nerd like us, man.
No. Next. Of course, this is also 12 years ago. You know, we've had 12 years of history to look back on. And
I mean, yeah, Hell in a Cell was only 7 years prior to this. I know. So.
Still, Mankind is still probably pretty fresh in people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
Next, Eric Bischoff was backstage complaining about a Team Raw losing the first match of the night.
Yeah, man. Well, he's mismanaging stuff. And then Vince came in and told him so.
Yeah.
Ran him down. He said, "Who are you? You're not the guy who almost drove me out of business."
Yeah.
Blah. by the way, good luck in your match. Good luck with Jonathan Coachman versus Batista.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much how it went. Next, talking about putting belts on people to get them over.
Oh, my goodness.
We had Lance Cade and Trevor Murdoch take on... Oh, actually, before this, they had results of a poll.
Who for the main event.
Who would be in the main event along with Cena and Angle.
Yeah.
In between HBK, Kane, and Will. The Big Show. HBK won because mm-hmm. he's the best ever.
Yeah.
So that meant that Kane and Big Show would compete against Lance Cade and Trevor Murdoch for the tag team titles, and that
so
match happened
convoluted.
Next. I know.
I like that the reaction for the results. HBK was very tickled with
yeah.
winning. I mean,
yeah.
that was, talk about obvious.
Yeah.
And the Big Show gave him a handshake, and then Kane just did not want
it. But it was weird because it was like face Kane. The crowd popped for him.
Yeah, I know. And he was hecka chummy with
he
Big
was
Show.
Laughing. And like the whole story of the match was like, well, these two guys are just forced to be partners. They don't really want to be
I know, but
partners.
Kane was acting like Big Show's best friend at
yeah,
the end of the match.
They were like hugging at the end.
He was like, you did very good.
I know. And Kane was all smiles.
Yeah.
Like
he was
joking around.
He was super smiles and like he thought the cameras weren't on him or something. That was hilarious.
It was weird.
Yeah. Anyways, what happened next?
Wasn't much of a match.
Oh, yeah. This was, yeah. I like that Murdoch guy. I don't know why he didn't go further.
I know he had some good personality.
He
sold well.
Yeah, he was a big hoss, big personality. That Lance Cade guy, I didn't really know much about. I know he died young.
Oh, he did?
He died in like 2009, like really shortly after he got released from the company. He ended up dying. It was like 2008 or so. And then
I think I read on Wikipedia that he trained at Shawn Michaels.
He did. Yeah, he did. Yeah. And then, yeah, he died pretty young.
That's
so.
A bummer.
Yeah, it's a total bummer. I don't know what ever happened to the Murdoch guy. Maybe he's still wrestling. Who knows? But I thought he was...
Murdoch wrestled in TNA for a little bit.
Oh, I think I remember that. I think I do know that. Who knows where he is now?
Yeah. Big Show pinned Lance Cade after the double choke slam. Kane and Big Show combined forces.
Yeah.
Choke slam together.
Yeah.
Lance Cade got the pin.
I like they were celebrating the win in the end, and then Murdoch started like yelling at them.
Yeah,
from outside.
He got double choke slam too.
I don't know what he was. Why was he yelling at them?
I don't know. Really, if he just lost, just get out.
Yeah, get out of there, man. You don't want Chummy Kane on your bad side.
No.
Next up,
Vader and Goldust backstage talking to the coach, Jonathan Coachman.
It's funny. So back then, before we had a podcast, I didn't really know Vader's legacy all that well. Now when I look back on this, I'm like, man, they kind of treated Vader like a joke. And he was like an all-timer, dude.
Mm-hmm.
He was like an all-time Hoss.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a bummer to me,
I
you know? But,
yeah,
you know.
He was a henchman for Jonathan Coachman.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
He was kind of a comedy act with Goldust, which
yeah.
Goldust could always pull
yeah,
up
yeah,
being
yeah.
a comedy act. But Vader, like, really? Anyways, I'm sure Leon got paid well for it. Next up,
we had the women's division found out the stipulation for their battle royal.
Yeah,
between lingerie, cheerleader outfits, and
something else skimpy.
Yeah,
it was something else.
Surprise, surprise, lingerie won.
Yeah, you know what's really sad too is that, like, besides Candice Michelle, who I never thought was a decent wrestler, there's so much great talent in the women's division.
Oh, Victoria was great.
It's like, why, yeah. It's like, why wasn't the option just let them fucking wrestle?
I know.
Just,
I know. Let's let them wrestle.
Just let them wrestle. Like, what's the big deal? It's not like, what I mean, I know this could be an argument the other way, but like, their ring attire in the first place isn't that far removed in terms of volume of actual cloth.
Yeah.
From like lingerie, the
like,
lingerie they had
what,
on.
What Trish was wearing, just and to a lesser degree, somewhat Victoria. Like,
uh-huh.
This could just be their ring gear.
Kind of, yeah. So it's like, really? Just like, why did it take them so... And this is one of those things I was talking about from earlier. It's like they seem so intent for the longest time on just holding on to this idea that, oh, no, they're going to... Yeah, the boys, those horny teenage boys or whatever are going to love tuning into this crap, you know? And it's like, dude, I just don't think that there's... Far along enough, they really should have just been focusing on the wrestling at that point.
I know.
You're killing your audience, man.
I know.
You're killing your audience.
Especially when you have talent like Trish Stratus and Victoria in there.
And Mickie James
Mickie
was
James,
there.
Who could really wrestle.
Who could really wrestle. Yeah, it was sad, dude. And they
yeah.
had to act like they were all cool and into it and stuff.
And
could you imagine if they
that's
just...
That's got to be soul-sucking going up there with that. Who is that guy hosting the control center? Todd something.
Oh, Todd Grisham?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And have him up there, like, leering at you and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, I know.
Ugh.
Like, could you imagine how great it would have been if they just, like, all got together as, like, a big group backstage and just said, hey, Vince, so if you really want to keep a women's division, we're not going to do this.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can rebuild. I mean, obviously, they couldn't do that. It'd probably be career suicide. But I don't know. I kind of feel like how great would that have been?
It'd been fantastic.
You know, hey, we're just going to wrestle in our regular gear.
Yeah.
You know, or you're not going to have a women's division.
Yeah. I know. Next, the coach, Jonathan Coachman, took on Batista. I guess originally he was supposed to wrestle Stone Cold.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They did a video package before the match that laid out the story. They didn't go so far back as to say why he was supposed to wrestle Stone Cold, but Stone Cold just couldn't do it. And so they found a replacement from SmackDown, and apparently it was just the top guy from SmackDown.
Yeah, yeah.
The World Heavyweight Champion, Dave Batista.
I feel like this was beneath both Stone Cold and Batista. Oh, yeah. Because this was, I don't know why they ever put Coach. I mean, they always did annoying things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who really wants to see Michael Cole?
I know, take on Lawler at Mania.
Right. Who really wants to see that? Nobody. I don't know why they would just, I don't know why they would do that.
I don't know either. It's frustrating. Because you can tell Batista just did not want to do it.
Oh, I know.
And yet he had to lay there and get beat up with a belt and a kendo stick. It's like, why are you putting the top guy on SmackDown through all that?
Dude, it's so beneath him. You know, it's so dumb.
But it was impressive to see Batista give Vader a spine buster.
Oh, I know. That was cool.
That was really cool.
That was neat.
And he put a little bit extra muscle on that Batista bomb for Coachman, mm-hmm. It seemed like.
Yeah, a little bit. So, yeah, there was that. What else?
Next.
Yeah, this was easy to predict. That was going to be a street fight.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody
it
can
was
see
what,
that
a verbal
coming.
Debate, a street fight, and what was the other option? Is it submission match for that one?
No, submission was the Ric Flair Triple H. I forget what the other one was.
But it's going to be a street fight.
Yeah.
Next, Shawn Michaels is backstage giving an interview. Was interrupted by Kurt Angle. And Kurt Angle was pitching HBK on an alliance, saying, let's take John Cena out of the match. We can
I love Kurt Angle, man.
That one of us will be the new WWE champion.
Kurt Angle was so good at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, he was only, I think, probably a year removed from...
Yeah, it's 2006 he left.
2006, I think he left. So he was, I don't know. I mean, who knows what his mental status was at the time. I know he went through a lot before he left.
Yeah.
But, man, he was still so good.
And HBK was good, too.
Oh,
God. That delivery, the last line, was fantastic.
He was great, man. He was absolutely great.
So I said, think about it.
Yeah. No, he was really good. I like that they're already making Cena into lol, Cena wins.
Guy. Oh, I know.
You know.
Next, we had the Women's Battle Royal. I think they call it Fulfill Your Fantasy Women's Battle
what does
Royal.
What does that even mean? That's so dumb.
It is dumb.
It was for the title, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, I do have to say this, though. Joey Styles, I always love listening to him. Like, Lawler, especially at this point, not so much.
No.
But Joey Styles was always so great, man.
Yeah.
I loved
his
commentary.
Yeah, Lawler was very often, especially during this match, just out-and-out gross.
Oh, I know.
It's so off-putting.
Yeah, I know, right? It's so gross. But there was some good wrestling in the match.
Yeah.
You know, there was some good stuff. And this is in the middle of the Mickie James being crazy fan for Trish Stratus.
Yeah.
So she like basically did the job, like, or she eliminated herself
and Victoria so Trish could win. Yeah,
right, exactly.
And she saved Trish from elimination a couple times,
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah.
Maria Kanellis was eliminated first by Trish and Mickie. They joined forces for a bit at the beginning, and then Candice Michelle was eliminated by Ashley was then eliminated by Victoria, and then, as you said, Mickie eliminates herself and mm-hmm. Victoria, so
yeah.
Trish wins.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, Trish is trying to give an interview, and Mickie James keeps interrupting,
yeah.
saying how what an honor and a joy it was to wrestle in this match with Trish.
Yeah.
And just talking her up. It was great.
Yeah.
The match itself wasn't that great, but Mickie's performance was really good.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Next.
Next. Cage match. Triple H versus Ric Flair. This was awesome.
This is amazing. And I get the feeling that Triple H, I get the feeling that Triple H might have stumbled across some tapes of, like, you know, world-class championship wrestling.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a hoss fight.
Mm-hmm.
It was like just an old-school, brutal, bloody cage match where there were some athletic-ish spots. I mean, for Flair anyways.
Yeah, he jumped off the top rope successfully with
the rarity. Yeah, I know, which is crazy. But there was a lot of blood, and there was a lot of milling about. It was just a brutal...
It was good storytelling.
Knockdown, drag-out
fight. Structurally, it mirrored itself
because for the first half of the match, up until Triple H put Flair in the figure four, mm-hmm. Triple H was firmly in control.
Yeah.
And then Triple H was trying to get the Flair in the figure four again. Flair, well, first of all, Ric Flair got busted open like within the first 2 minutes.
Oh, it was with very quickly.
Gushing out.
Yeah.
And then about halfway through the match, Flair pushes Triple H off him into the cage. Hunter starts bleeding.
Yeah.
And so they're both just covered in blood.
Oh, it was great.
And from that point on, Flair has the upper hand. Uh-huh. There's a little back and forth here and there. Flair gets Triple H in the figure four. Triple H grabs the ref and throws it into Flair to break the hold. In the finish, or towards the end, Flair tries to escape the cage and grabs onto a chair. Just happens to be sitting there.
Yeah.
Brings it in the ring. There's some chair shots on Triple H. Protected, thankfully. He got his hands up.
Yeah.
And then Flair gets out of the door.
A couple things I liked about this match. I like the entire match.
It was really fun.
It was really fun. It was really cool. I do like towards the beginning, though. I was talking about Joey Styles earlier. He was like, yeah, the IC title in this case is completely meaningless. This is personal.
I know. Way to bury that belt, Joey.
Exactly.
I remember I heard that, too.
He also, though, to his credit, when Flair first bled, he made such a big deal about it and described it in such poetic detail. He said all those decades of scar tissue on his forehead, you know, being busted. And the language was so like, I don't know, floored. It was so great.
Yeah. I mean, like they go into this, the video package leading into this match was and Triple H talked about it in the Ric Flair documentary, actually, about how, let's say we're still alive. How that Flair was like during this time a shell of his
right,
self,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
And that kind of played out in the match a bit, where Triple H got the early upper hand, and then Flair finally, you know, channeled Ric Flair of old.
Yeah.
Got the win.
No, I thought it was great, man. And there was so much blood.
A lot of blood.
It was so much freaking
tons
blood.
Of blood.
Yeah, it was great. Let's see here. Oh, I love the part too when Ric Flair grabbed Triple H's D&Bs.
Oh yeah, and held on to that. That's towards the end.
That was fun. I wonder who
that was. Interesting.
That
towards the end when he yelled to Triple H, "I'm gonna kill you."
Right.
He gave him the middle finger several times.
Yeah, that was great. I love it because I feel like Triple H seemed to have so much fun with Ric Flair and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just their own little universe where they were doing this thing where he was like, how dare, like, he's, no, I'm not going to let anybody trample on my memories of Ric Flair. And he's talking about Ric Flair.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was really good.
It was good.
Yeah.
Finally, our main event, Kurt Angle versus John Cena versus HBK for the WWE Championship. Another stellar match, fast-paced. Whatever alliance Kurt Angle had in mind was instantly shattered because the first person he went after was HBK and punched him right in the face.
Yeah.
But later on the match, they did join forces for a bit to take Cena out of the match, suplexing him through the table.
Yeah, I loved the entrances when Shawn Michaels gets in. And during the entirety, so Kurt Angle comes out first, Shawn Michaels gets in second, and during the entirety of John Cena coming down the ramp, whenever it goes back to the ring, Kurt Angle is just staring daggers through HBK.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something about it that it was so in character the entire time.
So this show took place, I think, November 1st, 2005. So it'd been about 5 months after, no. Wait, let me think. WrestleMania 21, that was when it was HBK.
Uh-huh,
Angle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
about
yeah.
5 months after the WrestleMania match, yeah.
I don't know how much longer, if they continued their feud much longer after Mania.
Well, they said, Kurt Angle said they had 3 matches by the time Taboo Tuesday.
Okay.
So they each won one, and then there was no winner in the third one.
Okay, all right.
So I think it was still happening.
You could totally tell both these guys were so geeked out to be in the ring together, though. Like, I really feel like, I don't know, they knew that each one was the best, so they went at it super hardcore. It was cool. It was a really fun match, though.
Yeah, it was. They suplexed Angle and HBK suplexed Cena through the table, and then the two of them went at it. There was a super Olymp or Angle Slam off the top rope onto HBK. There was Cena eventually got himself back in the match, and there's that great spot where Kurt Angle puts him in the angle lock,
mm-hmm.
and every time Cena tries to escape, Angle just rolls through and keeps which I'm sure we've seen before, but it never gets old.
Yeah, I know. I love it. It's
and
great.
Then HBK crawls up to the top rope and drops an elbow on Angle to break up the hold.
Yeah.
And then HBK hits Angle with Sweet Chin Music, about to go for the pin. Cena grabs him, gives him a FU.
An FU.
And retains the title for himself.
Yeah, man.
A pretty fun
show. It was a fun show. It was cool. Let's see here. I always like looking at the Wikipedia entry for Aftermath. Following Taboo Tuesday, John Cena and Kurt Angle's program continued. Cena defended the title at Survivor Series. Kurt Angle chose Daivari to be the special guest referee at Survivor Series. Cena went on to defeat Angle. Lol, Cena wins. Triple H and Ric Flair also continued on at Survivor Series, where they were scheduled in a match for a wrestler who was a last man standing match. Triple H defeated Flair at Survivor Series. The feud between Raw and SmackDown continued with Bischoff and Theodore Long deciding on a 5-on-5 elimination match and a singles match between the two of Survivor Series. Wow, that'd be great. Let's watch that. I wonder if Eric Bischoff did his karate thing.
Wasn't he supposed to be a black belt in something?
And a motorcycle gang guy?
Yeah.
Let's see here. Do you want to know who the Survivor Series Team SmackDown team was? Batista, Rey Mysterio, JBL, Lashley, and Orton. They faced off against Shawn Michaels, Kane, Carlito, and Chris Masters.
Wow, SmackDown had a good team.
Yeah, they won too.
Yeah.
Oh, and Teddy Long defeated Eric Bischoff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I feel like we just watched Survivor Series 2005.
I know. Well, we don't need to do that. We're not going to put that up for vote. Nope. We're not sure what we're going to put up for the vote for the next Going In Raw View. When is the next Going In Raw View?
Last Sunday of the month, generally.
Oh, so it's going to start again in 2018?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Right on.
Or the last Saturday, since it's going to move to Saturday now.
Good.
It's Matt Chats on Sundays in 2018.
Good.
Good.
Very good.
Good.
All right. Anyways, let us know what you guys thought about Taboo Tuesday. Here's some music for you, Hilton. There you go. Hilton, hit the music.
Why you named your computer Hilton.
Oh, Hilton's sitting right there. Hey, Hilton. Good to see you.
Trish Stratus.
Oh, hey, Trish. How you doing, too? She's hanging out with Hilton. Talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Oops.